It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
Okay, 18th time's the charm. This time, I'm just going to trust this is working because I don't care enough to check it for the 12th time.
Okay.
But I don't know if it's not coming through the speakers. What if I do this? Is that that makes it bigger? So I guess that's the thing. I guess it's at least coming through mine. You should talk.
Okay. It seems like it. I mean, when you tried it before, it was
working. When you
performed,
did you ever do live performances as Pilot House?
Okay, look. When I was growing up.
No, did you ever do live performances as Pilot
House? I'm going to explain something to you right now. When I was growing up, I did a lot of stuff, singing and speaking and all this stuff, and I had to do microphone checks all the time, and I hated it, always hated it.
Why?
And yes, I did do some live performances at Pilot House, the same thing. I don't know. It always annoyed me. I had to do it, and I did it.
Well, you have to do it now, too, so.
I know, but I don't like it.
Do it. Every time I'm like, okay, say something, and you're like, something. And I'm like, that's not going to help me at all.
Yeah, I've never liked it. But I've been doing it since I was 10 years old, and I never did like it. I don't even know why. It's not a big deal, but it just always annoyed me.
I could see the awkwardness on stage. I don't know if I've ever actually done one, like, in a live performance. I could see that being weird, but.
But yeah, I mean, because I did public speaking, I did acting, and I did singing. Like I said, from the time I was 10, so I was constantly doing that. And then in my adult years, I did do some, not as much performing, but some public performance. I think, actually, now that I think about it, as Pilot House, I think we only did one public performance my whole life. We did
Fulton County Prison?
No, we did some original stuff at a coffee shop in Des Moines. I think that was the only time we did it. I don't think we did it before or after. We might have done another one, but I don't remember it.
When I was in high school, we hung out at a coffee shop called the Kowalski Sisters. And it was absolutely like our, we felt so grown up doing it. It was like our version of a bar that we always went to. Hmm. And especially on the weekends, we'd go there and we'd play cards for hours and drink these gigantic espresso drinks in those huge 22-ounce coffee mugs mm-hmm. that are now pretty much just a novelty. But back then, because, you know, this was the 90s, so coffee houses were the thing. But especially on the weekends, they would have regular, like, live music. And something about that, we thought that was, like, extra cool. It was a very 90s vibe all around. We mostly played Hearts. We a little bit played a game we called Egyptian Rat Fuck, which I believe is known for a lot of other people as Jack Slap. I don't know. There were a lot of names for them. We like to fit curse words into things when we could because, again, high school and, again, 90s. So we were all over that.
I think it was the 90s when we played that coffee shop.
That makes sense because that was when that kind of stuff was big.
Because when I left home, I probably said this before, I didn't really like performing. I mean, I did it.
I feel
it.
Like you still don't really like performing.
I never really liked it. So when I left home, you know, I would come home and Dad would, from college or wherever, and Dad would always ask if I'd been doing any performing, and I would say no. Because when it was up to me, I just wasn't that interested. Now, when I started to, for about 10 years there, I was a member of a church, and I was doing sermons, and I was doing public speaking, and I performed some there.
You were doing sermons.
Well, I don't know what you say. You don't perform a sermon, really. You just
No, but ministers are particularly generally, and priests are the ones who give sermons.
Oh yeah, I at least once a month, and sometimes twice a month, I would give the sermon on Sabbath.
Why you?
I.
Were you ordained as a minister in this church?
I was an elder. I was not.
Did the others give sermons?
Sometimes.
Did you write your sermon?
Yeah, I mean, it was my original composition, yes.
Wow.
And I did that
for... Did you save any of those?
Maybe.
I want to read those.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
Because I have no idea what those would look like.
Oh. I mean, I might be able to find, like, a tape recording of one.
Yeah, totally. I want to hear that.
I'll see if I can find something. I might not have anything, but
that
I might.
That sounds fascinating to me.
I don't know how I feel about it.
I promise not to say things on the podcast about it.
I mean,
since this whole topic comes from you not liking to perform.
Well, I didn't mind doing sermons at all. I mean, most public speaking, I don't mind. But performing, like singing or being in a play. Another thing I didn't mind doing was, for a while, like, you know, I've told you I was a puppeteer for a while, and I'd do it to tell... In the middle of the service, there would be a special time for kids, like a children's story.
Mm-hmm.
And I would do that. And I would improvise it with whoever I was working with. But whether it was my wife back then or one of the other elders, I would like just prep them beforehand. I'd say, well, I'm going to set up this gag and set up that gag, and then we just improvise the whole thing.
Was this a Seventh-day Adventist church?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I liked doing that just fine, even though it was improvisational and it was all off the cuff. But I was... You know, it was a puppet, so I felt totally comfortable with that. But
now I'm just picturing you having the puppet ask the audience, like, name a location, an occupation, and a time of day.
This is what I would do. I would tell whoever I was working with that I'm going to ask you this question, and, you know, I want you to give this answer. So I would prepare gags. Sometimes I wouldn't tell them what the gag was.
Just... When I cue you,
yeah,
say this.
Yeah, I'm setting this up, right. And then I could basically tell them the story that the puppet was going to tell or what lesson was going to be learned from the interaction that we were having. And it always worked. I don't know why, because I would do it with whoever was available. And they always just did whatever I said. I mean, they just took my instructions and just did it. And it always worked out great.
And eventually, Willie Ames took over the puppet show, and it eventually turned into Bible Man.
But I did lots of sermons, and they were all kind of a Bible study based types of things. You're seriously interested in this? That's
absolutely.
That surprises me for some reason.
I cannot picture it.
Oh.
I cannot in my head. It's sound, so it's not. I keep saying picture and like visual. I can't audialize what you giving a sermon would sound like. Hmm. And also, my experience with churches is that the ministers or priests, if it's Catholic or Episcopalian, I guess, give the sermons, and that's like the biggest part of their job is that, and I've never heard of like, no, we just pick other people.
Well,
to
I mean,
do it.
It's not random. I mean, you select people who are sort of like we didn't have Sunday school because we went to church on Saturday, so it was Sabbath school. I would teach Sabbath school a lot.
No, and I've definitely heard of that.
But the thing is, for a lot of Seventh-day Adventist church, smaller ones especially, the minister might be a minister for more than one church.
Oh,
so
really?
He's not going to be there every week.
I didn't know that.
So they will have a lay leader, usually an elder, but sometimes the elders aren't very good at sermons. They're good at doing other elder things. So they'll have someone who they think is reasonably good at this kind of thing do it. And so for a while I did it when I wasn't an elder, and then I did it often enough, and they relied on me to do it often enough. And I was doing other elder work that they made me an elder, but not yet ordained. I would have had to do the elder thing for a little bit longer, and then they would have ordained me as an elder. which all that would have meant was that it was, would have been more or less a title. I wouldn't, and I would have been given other responsibilities in the ministry.
And you wouldn't have had to pay taxes.
No, I mean, there wouldn't be any kind of monetary thing involved. It would just be a station, just a thing that you are in the church, and people would call you this, like, you know,
yeah.
Well, Elder Bill is here from Iowa City, and he's going to, because I would go other places to give sermons, actually. I traveled lots of places. People would ask me, can you come, you know, to our church and do this sermon or do this special music?
Yeah, no, I totally want to hear this or read them.
Have I not ever told you any of this stuff
No,
before?
Not at all. I knew, here's the history I knew about you and the Church of the Seventh-day Adventist. You once were a Seventh-day Adventist. That is literally the sum total of my knowledge of your time in that church slash faith slash supergroup.
Well, I did quite a bit with the Iowa City Seventh-day Adventist Church before I left it. And I was on the verge of doing a lot more. In fact, I probably would have, had I stayed in, I probably would have ended up having a congregation of my own eventually. That's just the kind of stuff I did for the church. But unfortunately, my marriage fell apart, and my wife worked for the church as a school teacher, and that caused issues.
Yeah. There's a variety of different reasons, but I've known a lot of people who have left frequently their specific denomination when their marriage, or in some cases, almost marriage, or relationship ended.
Yeah, it's not uncommon.
And sometimes it's them leaving the faith, but sometimes it's them leaving that particular faith. For, like I said, the variety of reasons. Sometimes it's logistical, sometimes it's emotional, there's lots of factors.
A lot of times, I don't tell a lot of people about it because I'm afraid they're going to assume, oh, you got divorced and they didn't like that and they kicked you out or they ostracized you. And it wasn't anything
that. No.
It was just, okay, well, I'm obviously going to cause difficulty and discomfort. I mean, I didn't want people's worship experience to be uncomfortable. So it's like, all right, well, that's her congregation now. But there aren't very many other alternatives.
Yeah.
And then after a while of me not really having a place to go, I just ended up not going anywhere.
Yeah.
And
yours sounds very logistical. I think, and I'm just sort of making this up here, but in the same way that a huge tragedy can cause someone to find their faith, I think a huge tragedy in which the faith they are in provides them with insufficient comfort can cause them to leave it. And I don't necessarily mean like the people didn't pay enough attention or whatever, but you know, different faiths have different ways to deal with tragedy and different outlooks on it. And sometimes if someone has been very comfortably in the faith, sometimes since upbringing, and then are hit with a major tragedy, they find very cold comfort in whatever is there and say, this is clearly not for me.
Well, you know, I think one of the things is when I went, I was more or less, I mean, my mom had been a Seventh-day Adventist before she became a Methodist.
Yeah.
And my grandmother was still always a Seventh-day Adventist. So I was exposed to that. And I believed that a lot of their take on certain doctrinal issues was more right than the Methodist's take. So when I first came here to college, I went to the Methodist church, but I also went to the Seventh-day Adventist church sometimes. But I more or less joined.
Somewhere in here is a madness in their Methodism joke, but I can't really comfortably.
I more or less joined the Seventh-day Adventist because my wife did.
Yeah.
More or less. So another thing that happened when we split up was, again, at first it was just, well, I'm not going to be a bother to those people in that church. I'll go to another church or I'll switch my membership to a different church. But over time, as that didn't happen, I started more and more to realize that I've never really, for me to participate in organized religion took quite a bit of effort. I wasn't a deep believer in it, but I thought, I thought of it as a way to perhaps reach out to other people, to do charity work, you know, all kinds of things. I thought it was a means to something.
Yeah.
And the longer I was away from it, the more I realized it wasn't a means to that at all. In fact, it was, if anything, my association with organized religion, not just with the Seventh-day Adventists, but any church, it was almost a hindrance. You had, like, I had to work so hard to get a program in place to distribute clothing or to distribute food or to whatever. I mean, I did get those things going, and I did those things through these organizations, but I really had to work hard at it. It's like, it shouldn't have been like that. And so I just eventually sort of realized that I'm not really behind this whole organized religion thing very much.
And he switched to podcasting.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, hello, everyone.
I didn't know this topic would interest you at all.
So. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat podcast. The only podcast in the world with a host to listener ratio on par with the professor to student ratio at some of the most elite small private colleges. But we do suffer when it comes to the percentage who have PhDs. I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 378.
And given we're over 15 minutes in, I feel like I should tell you what this show is about. We have a hat. It's magical in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Folks out there who we need, folks who could help us, please, hint, hint, only one of you actually wrote in after the last time I begged. Cool people, sexy people. Write in to that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. The hat, all on its own, magically transmogrifies those emails into little note cards with the information written on them that manifest physically within the hat itself. We, its earthenware servants, reach into the hat and draw the note cards out at random, read them on the air, talk about them till we're bored, do that for about an hour, that's the whole show, except for the parts that aren't, which is most of it.
Do you also have a hard time imagining me performing live, like, as a singer or a musician?
No.
What's the part that makes it hard to picture?
It's very specifically the sermon idea. I don't know what that looks like. Well, that's the thing, and the concept of sermon can be a very broad category.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm curious to see your particular case. I am not curious, I should say up front, to hear what your interpretation of your particular kind of sermon is. I want to actually hear it or read it and determine for myself what kind I think you were doing.
Oh.
Because I'm sure you have opinions about what kind of sermon you think you do.
I'm not sure I do have an opinion about it.
All right.
Just something I did.
Well, I want to see what you did, or hear it, or read it, or, you know, those things. No, I feel, because, honestly, when I think of you performing, especially for Pilot House, I just remember the end of Inquire Within. And there's you singing in that. And from the sound of that, I can sort of picture what that would look like.
Okay.
And I've got it from there.
Okay.
I'm not saying that if there is footage of you performing at one of the county fairs for the talent competition, that I wouldn't be all over that.
No, but there might actually be something like that.
I feel like I have a sense of that. I mean, I definitely want to see it if it's out there. But it's not as much of a mystery to me. That's more of a point and laugh kind of thing. Because I'm a horrible person.
I see.
But the sermon, I'm very curious. So how was your week? Did you do any sermons?
No. But, I mean, since you saw Solo, maybe we should just talk about that.
Let's get right to it. All right.
I mean, I do have other things I could talk about, but they don't. They can wait.
Well, to recap, for other people, you loved it.
I did love it, yeah.
Thought it was awesome.
Yeah.
And have you seen it a second time since?
No, but my wife has become a huge Amelia Clark fan.
Yeah, somebody else I talked to today was very excited because of Amelia Clark. Which is funny, because in the same conversation, they also complained about Woody Harrelson in it, in that he was a known face, and it was distracting to them that it was Woody Harrelson. And I'm like, but you loved that it was Emilia Clarke. And at that point, they're like, I guess it is a personal preference.
No, but my wife didn't really know anything about her before. And
now, because you guys haven't watched Game of Thrones or anything yet.
And now she's crazy about her. And so now we are watching Game of Thrones. So that's something else we'll talk about completely.
Wow. I'm going to be real curious to see how you do with Game of Thrones.
Well, we've watched the whole first season already. And
wow.
I could talk a lot about it, but let's talk about Solo.
I definitely think we should. I have a very succinct review of Solo. Actually, I have a fairly succinct review and then a very succinct review. My fairly succinct review goes like this. As a sci-fi adventure movie, I thought it was awesome. Highly recommend it in that context. Great time. Loved it. As a Star Wars movie, I thought it was pretty mediocre. As a Han Solo backstory prequel movie, I thought it was pretty shit. My extra succinct review is this: your enjoyment of this movie is directly proportional to how well you can forget that Star Wars exists while you're watching it.
Hmm.
To the extent that you can divorce the characters and the situations and stuff from anything you remember before, it's awesome. When you try and tie it to the things that it is genuinely tied to, it falls apart in dumbass ways.
Well, I think I have to agree with you on all those points, because the one thing that I think one of the reasons I did love it was because I wasn't thinking about it being Star Wars. I wasn't thinking about it being Han Solo even really. Or it, to me, it was like, none of that stuff ever existed, and I'm just watching this.
And it's awesome.
Watching this movie, and it's not connected to anything else. And I think that is why I loved it. Otherwise, you're right. I probably would have been nitpicking all these things and not liking this, that, and the other thing.
Let me see how many things I can say that aren't spoiling it technically. The actor who played Han Solo was pretty good with the mannerisms. He had some of them down pat. The smirk was dead on. It was kind of freaky. For a minute, I was like, did they CGI that in? Because it is absolutely Harrison Ford's Han Solo smirk. That being said, beyond that, I did not believe him as Han Solo. And I understand, in theory, that there's things that happen in between that sort of change him into the character he becomes. Although that's confusing, because once again, they played fast and loose with the timeline in weird ways.
Hmm.
Because the question for me of how many years between the end of this film and A New Hope and what was happening at the very end of this film confused me.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's supposed to be like a decade or something.
Yeah.
That's a long time.
Also, I don't consider this a spoiler, but every single thing you know about Han Solo from before New Hope happened to him on one adventure. Every single goddamn thing.
Yeah, yeah.
To the point that at first, in the beginning, it was like, oh, that's where that came from. That, oh, cool. And eventually it was like, seriously? That too? It just all happened today? Every single bit? And then I was like, hey, they didn't do, oh, well, I mean, I guess that's good because not everything. And then they did that. And then I'm like, oh, my God.
Yep, yep.
Every single thing. Don Glover absolutely owned as Lando. In a perfect balance of, you believe it's the same. He grew up to be Billy Dee, but he also definitely brought his own thing to the character. I thought it was funny that, at least for me, the moments when things were stressful, he sounded less like Lando Calrissian and more like Donald Glover, which just amused me. But that's because I'm familiar with his performing, so like, I don't think that was a problem. I 100% want to see a movie set before this that's Lando and L3.
That would be fun.
I would see the shit out of that movie.
That would be fun.
Yeah, a lot of things didn't add up right. But, yeah, as long as you can forget. I honestly, well, I'm torn about this. I feel they did not do justice to Chewbacca. That being said, it was pointed out to me, they did so much better than they might have done with Chewbacca.
Well, and they did more with Chewbacca than they've ever done in any other movie.
But they could have really fucked it up. Also, evidence in this movie that Chewbacca is literally one of the most handsome Wookiees out there. The other Wookiees look pretty freaky. I guess, teeny tiny spoiler, like every single other Star Wars movie, Warwick Davis is in this one. Unlike every other single Star Wars movie, he got a line. I was very happy for him.
Not only is he in it, but I'm told but someone who is familiar with the movie Guide or whatever, that he's playing the same character that he played in the prequels at the pod races.
Really?
It's actually the same character.
Well, he's come out good because he was basically dressed in a potato sack in the pod race. I think he's the only person who's been in every single one.
Well, every single what?
Every single Star Wars movie, I believe Warwick Davis. You don't always see him. Sometimes he's under
the first film he was in was he was a Wicket in Jedi.
Really?
So
he wasn't. I thought he was in New Hope and Empire as other things.
No, this is his first job. He was like a little. He was like a kid even.
Yeah. All right. Then I'm less impressed.
I'm pretty sure he wasn't.
Maybe he's the only one that's been in all three trilogies. But that's not true either.
This is the.
No, wait. It is true because none of our principals were in the prequels, so maybe he's the only one that's
been
in all
three trilogies.
Anthony
Daniels was in the prequels.
That's true, and yeah. I don't know. He's the only something. I don't remember what it is, but he's the only something. But I am always a huge fan of his, and it was so awesome to see him, see his face, because often you don't see his face, and he got a line, and that was great.
He is an exceptional talent, and
he is.
I don't know if you've ever seen him, like, because sometimes they have him do stuff. At panels and stuff.
Yeah.
He is great.
He's remarkably game, and he's got a great sense of humor.
Yeah, great sense
of humor. Well, and you know that because he did a whole TV show with Ricky Gervais. You have to have a good sense of humor to do that, in which he played himself, no less. He's also sort of soft-spoken and what's the word I'm looking for?
Humble?
Yeah, no, that's not the word. I keep wanting to say docile, but that's not right. But he's like, he's not a particularly gregarious guy. He's very friendly, but he's sort of reserved and quiet as an individual. What? I've seen him because he's been on panel shows that I watch and stuff too. He's a great guy, but he's not. I find
he's a good interviewer.
This could be terrible. Most little people actors that I know that are in the spotlight when they're not on the camera sort of try really hard to be likable, and like there's a lot of stuff about them being a little personal, and it doesn't work. Davis is just an actor, and he's a pretty quiet individual normally, and like his size doesn't seem to come up in his life. I mean, like, just in his interactions with people and stuff. And I'm sort of impressed with that, because I feel like, due to legitimately shitty things in the industry, a little person actor is sort of a specific category, and there's a lot of baggage that comes with it. Mm-hmm. And I know he suffers from some of that, but I feel like I mean, I guess Peter Dinklage is an even better example. He manages to just be an actor, and he's a good actor.
Yeah, he's very good.
I mean, they're both amazing actors, and I am pleased to see that. Whatever that means, I cannot help but somewhere in there think I was terribly sizist, and I'm sorry, but what else?
I'm glad you found a way to enjoy it. I mean, I think it can be enjoyed.
I did. And there were some cool touches. In general, it's not a super hard to predict plot.
No.
But that's fine. I mean, it's a great story in its way. I love seeing Paul Bettany. He did. This was a little stretch for him, and I liked that.
I liked it.
This is a little outside of where he normally plays. I mean, it was still... I was not surprised to see the casting, but his performance was a little different than usual, and I like that.
Mm-hmm.
They play really hard on the fan service. They have some really dumb things, we find out how Han Solo got his name, which you think was because that's what his parents called him, but it's not. It's way dumber. It's way dumber.
That was very strange.
Oh God. You can tell it's coming and you're like, no, why?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was pretty pleased. Also, very careful way around, near the end of the movie, somebody is revealed to be somebody else, and that somebody else turns out to be what Trish and I were both thinking, and then she told me about it, someone who looks so like a really young Maya Rudolph for some reason.
Mm.
She looked exactly like, how weird is that?
Yeah, that's interesting. I didn't even think about that.
I was thinking about it at the time, but I was immediately like, oh, she looks like her. And then Trish turned to me and says, was it me or did so-and-so look like a really young Maya Rudolph? I'm like, she did. I thought the same thing. Mm-hmm. So that was weird. No, but it's fun. Just forget the rest of Star Wars while you're watching it, and then you'll be fine. And it's really funny. It starts on the planet that he starts on, which is Corellia, which is where they make ships. I'm like, oh, they made a new planet, da da da, and I'm like, no, wait a second, Corellian freighter. That's one of those things that's just in my head from Star Wars. I'm like, oh, because they come from Corellia. Hey, so that was stupidly fun for me. also, the voice that you're not sure who's doing the voice, it's Jon Favreau. I figured it out halfway through his stuff, and I was like, I need to check at the end. And I checked, and it was Jon Favreau. A lot of kids going through my yard right now. A lot of children going back and forth. I think they're visiting the dogs next door. They absolutely wanted a sequel to this movie. I don't think they're getting it, but they were absolutely trying to.
That's too bad. I would watch it.
This is a very good looking movie. There's cool effects. Apparently a lot more of the effects are practical than you would think.
I thought Ron Howard did a fantastic job, honestly. Especially being under the gun.
Like yeah. Again, I think it's a very mediocre Star Wars film. A lot of the Star Wars-y touches almost seem satirical at times. There's definite things that even I, with my limited Star Wars knowledge, was like, but that doesn't work because of this. I mean, it wasn't terrible, but it was very so-so in that sense. And yeah, terrible for Han Solo's backstory. But, yeah. Go see it. It was loaded with trailers for shit I never want to see.
I don't even remember what the trailers were.
Incredibles 2, which, hell yeah, I'm all over that. Somewhere in the middle we had Ant-Man and Wasp in a trailer that made me want to see it so much less, and I didn't really want to see it before, but I'm committed, MCU, all that bullshit. And then at the very end we had another trailer for Bohemian Rhapsody, which I am surprisingly excited about. Every other thing was terrible. We had the new Mission Impossible. We had a new Robin Hood.
Yeah. I don't know.
Which also looks like somebody came up with it just after they finished watching V for Vendetta. It's seriously, it's like, what if Robin Hood was the guy from V for Vendetta? Seems to be this movie. Holy shit, no one asked for this. No one asked for this so hard. Like, I almost feel like we as a human race specifically asked not for this. Oh my God. I can't, I don't know why it's happening.
I don't either.
Looks so bad to me.
They had a King Arthur movie.
And it tanked. And it motherfucking tanked. Goddamn Guy Ritchie.
It wasn't good. We saw it. It wasn't very
good.
Did
you actually see it?
Well, we rented it.
It bombed. It bombed
and
at the theater.
And for good reason, because it wasn't good.
Yeah.
But it seemed like what I blame is the Robert Downey Jr. Sherlock Holmes movies. Because they've taken those.
Yes, except those are weirdly successful, and they are making a third one.
I know.
I don't know why.
But they're not good, I don't think.
We watched the first one and have not been back and will not
be
back.
Right. That's how we felt about it.
But
this notion that, oh, let's take these classic characters and turn them into action movies, and I just don't think it works.
See, the problem is I can't help but think the Jude Law, Robert Downey Jr., Sherlock Holmes movies absolutely could have worked if they weren't Sherlock Holmes movies.
Mm.
And I don't know that that's true. They still might have been too generic. But there's this vibe. There's this steampunky Victorian era action vibe that I feel like I can get behind. But I was just still constantly like, what the fuck does this have to do with Sherlock Holmes? And this is somebody who was quite a fan of the child's cartoon Sherlock Holmes in the goddamn 22nd century.
Hmm.
So I can handle new tellings of Sherlock Holmes. But, yeah, what the fuck?
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, I don't... There's a lot. Although, I guess if it wasn't Sherlock Holmes, it just would have been a half-assed sequel to League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. So I don't know what it is. I don't... We didn't see the second. We won't see the third. This movie did remind... Solo did remind me that I'm getting really tired of Star Wars stuff. I'm getting really tired of sequels. And I'm really getting tired of prequels. To paraphrase Patton Oswalt when talking about the prequel trilogy, I don't want to know about the stuff I love when the stuff I love was a little kid. I just want the stuff I love being the stuff I love. So, yeah. But a waste of Thandie Newton. She did a remarkable job, but there could have been so much more to it. Absolutely love the character of L3. I have other things to say about that character, but they are spoilery, so I cannot.
Yep, L3 was great, I thought.
I am still playing Horizon Zero Dawn. I have now figured out what fucked up the world, but I have not yet figured out what stopped the world from just completely eradicating all life, because something happened, so it's... didn't end up as bad as it could have been. I don't know what that is yet. And I also don't know. It's funny to me. It's a big... there's a big mystery in this game that they can't possibly figure out what it might be. And the suspense is limited to me because I live in the 21st century and know about some basic science fiction things that I'm like, clearly it's this. And I don't think I'm alone in that. Like, this one is really straightforward, but nobody knows about it in this post-apocalyptic world, and so it's just like, oh, how is this like this? And I'm like, because of this, obviously. But like, they can't figure it out, so that's funny. Still loving that game, though. I'm about 40 hours in, really liking it. Still highly recommend it for you and your wife.
I know, I keep telling her. And I,
and she's like, Tony's full of shit.
I'm not taking his advice. I think she's considering it, but right now she just wants to see Emilia Clarke in Game of Thrones. So that's...
yeah, talk to me about Game of Thrones. I am super curious. But I will tell you, you have to limit it to about 10 minutes.
Do you watch it?
No, I do not watch it. Well, neither of us watch it. Trish tried. As far as I know, I believe... around episode 9, she got bored, which she's the only person I've heard who stopped watching for that reason. But I don't watch it because of the rapes.
Okay.
And I should say, the book series has a lot of rapes in it. I read the first book long before there was a TV show. Did not like it. The TV show has extra rapes. The guys who created it managed to put in rape scenes that didn't exist in the books. Extra rape scenes. By the way, these are the same guys that want to make the TV show about an alternate universe where the South won the Civil War. So, yeah. And as I think I've said before, this is the only show or piece of media where nobody is an apologist for the rape. Every other thing I ever am like, I didn't like the rape, I stopped. Somebody tries to argue me around. Not that the rape is good, but they're like, oh, but it only happens for a little while. Or like, oh, but the rapist gets killed or tortured or whatever. And this is the only thing where even the most diehard fans, when I tell them my reason for not watching, after they go, why the hell are you not watching this? And I say, too rapey. They all just go, yeah, I get that. And they don't argue anymore. So I feel okay about this. But it's a huge phenomenon. And occasionally I feel bad that I'm not involved in it. But
don't feel bad.
Tell me.
Don't feel bad at all.
Are you not enjoying it?
No.
But your wife is.
Okay. Well, we saw the first episode before.
Okay.
And we were done.
Yeah. Okay.
It's only because of Emilia Clarke that she wants to watch this. And it's weird because she's sort of into, well, like I've said, she's into Gal Gadot now. She's into Daisy Ridley now. But she'll watch any little video on YouTube that's got Gal Gadot in it. But she's never suggested that we should watch the Fast and Furious movie that Gal Gadot's in, or any of the other movies that Gal Gadot's in. But she has got to see this Emilia Clarke and whatever she's in. So we're watching it, and we watched the whole first season, and we'll probably keep watching it because she likes her. She likes her character. She doesn't like the things that happen to her character, but she likes her character. There's other characters that she likes. I think she's a little bit fascinated by the world that everything's taking place in. And if she's enjoying it, then I can find a way to enjoy it. But I mostly find it's just not good. I mean, it's kind of the same as some other HBO shows like True Blood, where it seems like what the show is basically is, all right, we're going to have this softcore porn and this violence and this gore, and then we'll kind of stitch together a thin story to hook those things up. And it makes me feel like if I ever run into someone who really likes the show and they're telling me how much they like the show and what things they like about the show, it's going to feel like I'm talking to someone who's telling me they subscribe to Playboy and they really like the articles, you know, but yep. I don't, but I'm suspicious.
Hooters has really good chicken
wings.
Yeah,
that kind of thing. I'm suspicious that, yes, they're telling me that the food at Hooters is good, or they're telling me the articles in Playboy are good, but there's so much violence, gore. Let me give you an example. In season one, I can think of three instances where some character has a monologue that's completely boring.
Yeah.
And the way the writers cope with how boring this monologue is, and it's just full of exposition or whatever, is to pair it with nudity or an explicit sex scene. Like in one situation,
I think I've heard about this.
In
phenomenon.
One situation, the guy is, you know, he's instructing these two women in how they should have sex with each other if they're going to entertain, because he runs a whorehouse. And he's instructing them in how they should have sex with each other in a way that'll entertain the male guests. So he's kind of detached and not really engaged in what's going on. But so he's telling this story about his past while these two women
are practicing.
Yeah, right. And I'm thinking, really? You couldn't figure out a decent way to get this part of the story told. So now the guy's going to monologue, and you know how boring it is. So you think that if you have, and the camera work was, I mean, it was lurid. You know what I mean? It was just terrible.
Yeah.
And I thought, does this work for people? Because this is insulting my intelligence. You know, totally insulting my intelligence. And I hated it.
See, weirdly, if you took the rape out, I might be fine with that. But I do have, well, I have some bad news and good news for you, from what I know. The bad news is that shit's not going away the whole show.
I know.
The good news, though, it gets way better. Apparently, specifically, first season is far and away the worst. And some of that is people finally really got hooked into story. Because it is based off of a very long and intricate series of books. And there's, like, for all the things I can fault George R.R. Martin for, he writes a hell of an interesting story. Not necessarily a story I enjoy or want to consume, but it's very interesting. And that gets more of the focus. And then the other thing is, business-wise, a lot of people in the show did some really fucked up things in first season. And as the show got more popular and they renegotiated each season, they were able to say, and by the way, I'm not doing some of that crap anymore.
Well, the season ended better than it started. I will say that.
And I think in general, that's going to be an upswing. I can't say as much on the violence.
Well, I mean, the writing also isn't that great. There's moments where it's okay, but I give more credit to the actors than the writers. It's just, I just can't even believe this first season was successful. But we'll keep watching it. I don't think it's ever going to be something that I can say that I like.
People used to jokingly refer to its actual title as Tits with a Chance of Dragons.
It's just awful. And I don't mean to offend anyone who really likes it, but it's just, it doesn't do it for me. But it did sort of, it was a little bit better by the end. And if the things you're saying is true, I might, you know, well, I might get to enjoy it. I have no idea.
And
I doubt it, but.
A phenomenon that I have discovered that exists, if you have at least mediocre competent writing and performing in any show, with any sort of ensemble cast, which this definitely counts.
Yeah.
By a sort of weird osmosis, you're gonna start caring and wondering what happens. Like, by the third or fourth season, you're gonna find yourself invested in certain storylines, whether you want to be or not. I have discovered this in other things. It's because you're familiar with the characters, you know them, and so what happens to them is at least of interest, and when they do things that are somehow out of character, it you note that and things like that. Mm. So that can help, which is how I am barely crawling to the finish line here of Lucifer. And I now that we are, like, so close to the end, I can say, it was a terrible show, people. Don't bother to watch it. And I finally have narrowed it. It's the writing. All the performances are great. The writing is absolute crap. And it doesn't get better. It has highs and lows. And, in fact, in a recent episode, I saw one of the best scenes I've seen in that show in years, but it was surrounded by episodes, and that episode, that were absolute bullshit.
Well, I think I know exactly the kind of thing you're talking about, because to me, the show is boring.
Yeah.
I mean, nothing happens that's surprising. It's supposed to be all this intrigue and stuff going on. It's the kind of stuff you've seen 1,000 times before. I predict what's going to happen. It's just so boring.
I think that will improve for you. I don't know. I'm very curious. I want to come back to this periodically. Also, if I can figure out what season it is, there's at least two seasons, I think, where Cracked did a Cracked Responds video to each episode that I think you would find amazing if you could actually, like, watch them after those particular episodes. I found them completely enthralling, and I had no idea what the fuck was going on. I watched all of them multiple times, I think, because I don't know. I just find it funny watching them geek out about it.
Here's another problem I have with it, though, and this is just me, is, so it's set in something that looks like, you know, materially it's like, and
it's,
I guess,
medieval Europe.
Yeah, 12th, 13th century, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's not that.
No.
Which means
you didn't need all the shit that you have in there.
Yeah.
Yep. No, I'm with that in so many. This is fantasy that just looks like medieval Europe tends to annoy the shit out of me, because there are so many things not to like about medieval Europe. And you didn't have to put it in there.
No.
And the rape is a huge one. And I don't just mean rape is bad, let's not do it. But part of the reason rape is in there is that legitimately was a way to consolidate power in medieval Europe.
Right.
It was a shitty thing. And I don't know that we need to tell fantastic stories that incorporate it in there.
Yeah. I think it makes me think either the person who created this and the people who are creating the show are completely sexist, or they have a belief that sexism is something that humanity was bound to start with and have for a long time and have to get over. And I do think people do think that.
Well, I think things happen in the name of verisimilitude. I think people are very selective and, oh, I want this to be realistic to this thing. But, oh, it's fantasy, so we can have, like, people get weird about that. But the big one, and I've said this before, I specifically said this about Jim Butcher, way too many male writers, directors, whatever, their best way to show that a character is evil is to show him doing something horrible to a woman. Ideally, something sexually horrible to a woman. Because in their head, at least in their conscious head, that's the worst thing they can think of. And so that's always the best way to show how this person is reprehensible and irredeemable and horrible.
But so then, though, in your world building, you have to put certain values and certain beliefs in so that that works.
So that it makes any sense.
Ah, it's ridiculous.
Yep. Especially in a situation like this. And sometimes you can have it where you have one villain that's like that, and the world really disapproves, and that's horrible, and that's why they're still horrible. I still think it's lazy. I think it's lazy. But I think it's very common. Quick, draw a thing out of that. But I totally want to keep up with you on how this is going, because I'm fascinated. I feel like a lot of your reaction is going to be very similar to what mine would be.
Yeah.
And so I'm curious.
Mark wants to know,
What does Mark McKibben want to know?
In the Mass Effect games, do you play as Femshep or Bro-Shep? Is that what they call?
I've never heard Bro-Shep, but it works for me. Because I think too often it's just Femshep or Shep, which is not fair. Just to clarify, people back home, the main character in the original trilogy of Mass Effect, his last name is Shepard, and you have the option to play Shepard as a woman or a man, and a lot of people, when discussing it online and stuff, have referred to a female version of Shepard as Femshep.
Yeah.
And at least Mark seems to say here that people refer to the male version as Bro-Shep. This will be unsurprising. I played the whole trilogy as Femshep, and I played Andromeda as Fem Rider. Never considered not. I can already say William's wife played all of them female.
Yep.
Because that's what William's wife does.
Yep.
It's also what I do. I will say, and I did this with Knights of the Old Republic too, in the first Mass Effect, I attempted a second playthrough. And the main reason I did that was to play the other morality side, but I also opted to switch the genders because I wanted to see any sort of missing content, basically.
Sure, sure.
And that's how you do that. I didn't get very far in that replay, though, so I don't feel like it counts. And also, I always felt that that voice was weird. The original actress who did Femshep in the trilogy was awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Jennifer Cole, right? Or am I saying that wrong?
Hale.
Jennifer Hale, sorry.
Yep.
Did an amazing job. And I learned by looking things up, there's some dialogue that is specific to a gender in that game. And so you get this one if you play a man, this one if you play a woman. There are some places where you only get this dialogue if you play the woman, and you don't get any if you play the man. And I don't think the opposite is true. I don't know. Do you have a easy way to explain your wife's tendency?
Well, part of the draw for her, she'll play almost any game that will allow her to pick a female character.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a part of it that would make her choose it.
Yeah.
Other things too, of course, but just show her a game and say, hey, you can make your own character and it could be female, and she'll probably play that game. So that's one thing. The only time I've ever seen her play a male character when she had a choice was in the original Dragon Age. She played a male character a few times. I don't remember why that was. She liked it. I mean, you know, she didn't have any problem with it.
Yeah.
I think there might have been trophies associated with, yes, there were trophies associated with dating certain people, and they would only date
men.
So for her to get the trophies or the achievements to date those characters, she had to play a man, and she didn't have a problem with it. I mean, she liked it,
yeah.
I think. But if given a choice, nah, she's going to play a female, because that's just what she wants to do. I don't play anymore.
Yeah,
right?
I don't think of you as playing video games. I just think of you watching her play.
Back when the original Dragon Age was out, I think I played a little bit. Or like when we played Diablo and I could have picked, you know, female character or male character. I always pick a male character. I shouldn't say never. There have been occasions where we wanted a particular class that was female.
Yeah.
And I would play the female character,
and that ends up being the exception to any of this. I don't think you, me, or your wife are so committed to either gender that we're like, I want to play this class. It only comes in this gender. I don't want that gender.
I don't have any problem playing female. I do that plenty too.
Yeah.
And there have been other times where I don't know what games. It wasn't this one, so I don't know what I'm talking about. But there have been other times where it was a cooperative game. We could play. And I could play a male or a female, and I usually, like I say, I play male. But there was a way that characters were going to interact that my wife thought it would make her feel weird if my character was male.
Oh, okay.
I'm having a hard time remembering what that context was, but there was something about the game where I don't. It's not that they were going to have a relationship, but it was that
there was something where she would, if it was male, she would project you onto it, and it would seem
weird
that you were doing whatever it was.
Right, or the if, or like if he was going to at some point be giving her instructions, you know, it seemed like.
I see.
You know what I mean? Wouldn't seem like they're equals.
Yeah.
So I, you know, I'd play a female, and we'd both play female, and then that way their interaction would seem equal and not.
Yeah.
Asymmetrical or weird. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Do you have any thoughts as to why you generally play male?
I just think it's sort of the default value in my head, I guess. I mean, like I say, I'm not opposed to playing female. It's just, I think...
There's a self-image related, and your self-image is male.
Sure, yeah. I think also that... unless I have a reason to play a female, I feel a little, it feels disrespectful. I mean, it's not, but it...
I can understand that.
I get that little feeling that,
yeah.
You know, this, I should play a male because that's what I am.
I have a friend who always plays female, his male friend, who always plays females unless there is a romance situation that is, basically what he says is, I don't like hitting on dudes. And so... If there's one where for whatever reason that's what's going to happen, he'll sometimes play male, but generally he plays female. Mm. I don't think this should be too surprising, but I'm a terrible transgender person. I consider myself trans. I consider myself somebody who in many ways prefers a female representation in general and can't have that. And so... In video games, as in online, whenever I have the opportunity to represent myself as a female, I do. Mm. Also, if I'm being... This is maybe more than people want to know or whatever, and this is definitely a secondary issue, but aesthetically, I tend to enjoy, like, female art. Like they spend more time making the women look interesting mm-hmm. than the men. And when it comes down to it, though I identify as bi, I... find women generally more attractive than I find men, and they're also frequently over-sexualized in video games, and while I am opposed to that as a concept, it's nice to look at while I'm playing the video game, or as people used to say when they would play, when guys would play females in massively multiplayer games, they said, if I'm going to spend hours staring at some character's ass, I'd rather it was a woman's ass. And I cannot deny that there is a small component of that. But in games where that's where sexualization is not even the case, I still do that. I any chance I get to represent myself as female, I'll take it. And especially in the Mass Effect games, it became very obvious right away. They wrote decently for it. I had some really interesting conversations about interspecies gender roles... that were very much from the perspective of one female talking to another female, where that dialogue wasn't written in any form on the male side. Mm. And it was very cool. And it's I'm at the point, I've done this so long, that is how I see myself in any sort of simulated environment. To the degree that back when I used to do more online roleplay and stuff, I tried occasionally to play a male character, and I could not pull off a convincing male. Because I've literally spent decades playing female online.
Yeah.
That's my thing. So that's why I do it.
Well, sometimes when, like I said, there have been occasions where she's played a male character to get certain achievements.
Yeah.
And sometimes the exact same scene with the exact same lines coming out of a man's mouth are problematic and bothersome when they weren't when it came out of, you know, when a woman was
saying.
Which
there's lots of reasoning behind that and all that, but yeah, I mean it's just there. I very much am in favor of games where you can pick, even when you really need a specific character. Assassin's Creed Syndicate did a brilliant job. You technically play two characters, a brother and a sister. There are missions that are specific to one or the other, and you have to be playing that one or the other one during those missions. Those are largely based on the personality of the two characters, and while I will admit aspects of the personality definitely fall along gender roles, it's not like, oh, this is a part that involves a lot of heavy lifting, so it's the guy. No, it's that the male character has very different ideas about how they should proceed and what they should be doing than the female character. And so things that go in the direction that the brother wants to go, you play as the brother. Things that go in the direction the sister wants to go, you play as the sister. The rest of the time and the vast majority of the missions, you can play as either one. And they technically have different skill sets, but you can pick. And I always played as the sister when I could. And from what I can tell, most people did. And the fun thing for me, I think I talked about it at the time, one of the side things is there are these fist-fighting contests. And my brain, from deep inside, being raised in American culture, very, like, unconsciously, like, I didn't even realize I had made this decision, assumed the brother had to do the fist-fighting. And so the first couple times I did that, and then my brain caught up and said, why did you assume that? And so I switched, and I didn't know if it would be, like, harder or whatever, because she's a very slight woman, and he's a very brawny man. It's not. And ever since, oh, man, it is so awesome watching her kick the shit out of these guys. It's all men that she's fighting against, and it is awesome. So that's what I always did. Yeah, and that's what I'm always going to continue to do. And I dislike when you have to play a man. At this point, I don't dislike when you have to play a woman, because it's still the exception.
Yep.
And I mean, when we get enough of them, I'm fine with, you know, this story really has to be from a male character perspective, or the story. As once we've got anything like parody, then I'm fine with that.
Yep.
But it's a ways away.
Yep.
And I do play games where I have to play a man, and I still play them. I'm not playing this.
Oh yeah.
Like, is it a game I think is fun, then I'm gonna play it.
My wife loves Uncharted.
Yeah.
Loves it. Well, loves playing that guy.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact. Now, she was thrilled when they came out with a Uncharted game where it was a woman and two women.
Yeah.
She thought that was fantastic. Yeah. But she did not have a problem at all playing Nathan Drake. She liked that character. She liked playing that character. No problem. But, yeah, given a choice, yeah, she's going to play a woman. And a lot of times the games that allow you to play a female character also allow you to sort of, you know, design how she's going to look and her hair and stuff. She likes that part of it. So, yeah. But she's looking forward to Red Dead Redemption, which I don't think she's going to have. I'm pretty sure she's going to have to play a guy in that.
I am not looking forward. I'm not going to play it, I don't think.
And not have any other options there. So,
yeah.
You know, she. But also, she is looking forward to the next Tomb Raider game, which.
Yep.
She's really looking forward to that. So.
All right. Well, we're over time. I'm sick of your face. So. That's all we got now, people. Tune in next week. Is next week when we have to do two episodes?
Yes.
All right. So next week and the week after is all going to be one exciting
two-parter
story. We'll be sick of it, but you'll think it's fun.
Mm.
So tune in for that, or else you'll have our listenership.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.